Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good morning. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is poker player and writer Ed Miller. Although today he's here to discuss daily fantasy sports. We'll be talking to Ed in a few minutes. We don't have many editorials on this show, but today we're going to have one. We've mentioned that the IRS is contemplating changing the threshold for W-2Gs from the existing $1,200 to $600. They're now asking for public comment on this, and the window for doing so closes 2 weeks from today. It'll close Tuesday, June 2nd. You can comment using your name or anonymously. My personal belief is that if this goes through, the casino industry as we know it will change dramatically. Video poker players will be forced to pay considerably higher taxes than they pay today. A considerable number of us video poker players will be taxed out of business. Enough players will quit gambling that many casinos will go out of business entirely. While many of us think of casinos as our enemies, the fact is that they are our watering holes. If casinos don't exist, we cannot ply our trade. On the website, cdcgamingreports.com, in the commentary section, Jeffrey Compton has an editorial providing you with all the data you need to send in a comment to the IRS. I took the time to do this. I encourage you to do it also.
Yeah, I put a link to that on Twitter at RWM21. So that'll link you right to Jeff's article, and he has links to how to directly give your feedback to the IRS, and also where to find your congressman to email, and various other. There's a AGA
link. American,
The American Gaming Association, but they have
a petition.
A petition, right? So all those links are there. You can find it at RWM21, and I'll put it up on our Gambling with an Edge Facebook page as well.
When I looked at the comments that have already come in, a number from anti-gambling sources that are going, those lousy gamblers should pay their fair share of taxes. I do. They should too. Basically, it's a tax somebody else's vices. Like, I don't smoke. I don't care if cigarette taxes go up.
But the problem is they're not taxing. It's not that gamblers aren't paying their fair share. 99% plus of gamblers end up losing money. And the IRS knows this. And what they're really doing is taxing people who don't have the ability or the energy to try to figure out how to file their taxes properly. So those people that they're collecting taxes from are people who actually lost money but don't know how to fill out their taxes and deduct their losses from their wins. So and the IRS has to know this. So it's basically a tax on stupid and lazy people.
Yeah, well, that's and there's other parts of it that most video poker players will end up paying considerably more than they do today. Your win-loss statements are automatically going to be filed with the IRS. That's a biggie.
Yeah, but that's a very tiny, tiny minority of the people who gamble.
Video poker players? Or you mean slot players?
Winning video poker players.
Agreed. But
yeah, it could put people out of business.
It affects everybody. Yeah, so yeah. The losing ones lose faster. So anyway, so much for our editorial. Recently, we had Jeff Huang on this show to talk about Pot Limit Omaha. Jeff is also a table game designer. His newest game is called Super Blackjack. You can play the demo on his site called highvariancegames.com. So click on the demo button and you'll find it. I played it. It's an interesting game.
Yeah, I love the actually the title, just High Variance Games, you know, perks my interest right away.
All right, good. Before we get into Daily Fantasy Sports, we have a follow-up question for Ed Miller about last week's show. A reader wrote in that he loved the show, but he would like to know what lessons are taught in Ed's most recent book called The Course that were omitted from his previous book, Small Stakes, No Limit Hold'em. Ed, how would you address that?
Hey, well, first of all, thank you for having me back. I appreciate it. So I've written a number of books. So Small Stakes, No Limit Hold'em is one I wrote with Sonny Maida and Matt Flynn about 5 or 6 years ago. And that book is mostly about how to win an online play. And it was specifically written toward how online play played, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. It's still very relevant, but it was, you know, it was geared toward teaching you how to exploit the particular mistakes that a lot of smaller stakes online players made. The new book, The Course, is more geared toward live play. It is kind of a survey of how to win at live games from the 1-2 level through the 5-10 level. I would say it covers pretty different stuff. I mean, they're just different books. They cover different topics. So I don't perceive that there's a lot of overlap between the two books. But if I were starting with a book today, if you wanted to know, if you haven't read either of those, you know, I would definitely go with The Course first.
All right. So, Ed, you've written quite a bit about Daily Fantasy Sports has a broken model and that it will likely implode in the near future. But in the meantime, is eminently beatable by the type of folks who listen to this radio show. Why don't we start off with you addressing this general subject for 10 minutes or so, basically uninterrupted except for some random smart-ass comments by one of the hosts who gets off on that, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, actually, and I want to talk about the broken part of it, why it's broken, too.
Okay. So. Yeah, sure. Well, So Daily Fantasy Sports is a new game. It's essentially what it is. It first hit my radar maybe 5 years ago, I would say. I think it was invented
6 years ago is when it
around then. I think it's invented by a poker player. That's kind of my vague recollection. I'm not 100% sure. If you invented it and you don't play poker, I apologize. I'm sorry. But anyway, so the idea is that it's sort of loosely based on traditional fantasy sports where you pick players from a sport like, say, baseball or football, and then you manage a team and you get points every time they score a touchdown or hit a home run or whatever, and then you total up the points or you sort of work out the scoring somehow, and then someone wins at the end of the year. Well, Daily Fantasy Sports took that sort of year-long game played with friends. You play those games, you know, in a group of 10 or 12 or 14 friends from work or whatever, and said, okay, well, let's take the season-long aspect out of it and just play it for a single day, and let's take the sort of 10 to 14 friends aspect out of it, and let's open it up as a game that anyone can play on the web anytime. And then essentially let's make it a gambling game where you pay money to enter contests, and then if your team scores well enough, you know, you win money. That's what Daily Fantasy Sports is. In the last couple years, it's been on my radar for 5 or 6 years, but I didn't, and I'm interested in sports. The concept interests me. So it was immediately perked, you know, me up as soon as I heard that it was a thing. But I sort of investigated, and there really was not a lot of money. I mean, it was a very small game, and, you know, in a time, you know, if I had more time on my hands, I would have investigated it, but, you know, I've got a kid and everything, so I kind of let it lay. But in the last 2 years, interest in it has exploded, and there's two main sites that offer the game now. There's a bunch of smaller ones, but the big sites are called FanDuel and DraftKings, and together those sites now have a market valuation in the area of $1 billion. At least that's what they're raising capital at.
One, so, one of them just bought was bought by Disney.
Right? Yeah, or at least a chunk. I don't know exactly all the details. But there's, you know, they're getting investment. At first it was private equity, and now they're starting to get investment from Disney, from some of the sports leagues are starting to invest in them and make partnerships and so forth. So it's getting to be a bigger thing money-wise, and a billion with a B is a big number. And these sites, right now, they haven't earned out their revenue is just a tiny fraction of that, right? So that valuation is purely based on projection of growth of this game. So the people who are investing at that amount are basically saying they think this thing is going to absolutely explode and basically become a game that many, many millions and millions of casual sports fans around the country are going to want to play on a daily basis. That's sort of the projection that the big money, so to speak, is making for this game. So that's why it's interesting. So I do think it's broken. I think unless the game here's my position. I believe that the game as it exists today is very unlikely to hit that projection. I don't think it's a good enough, well-designed enough game to make it as a gambling game as something that millions and millions of casual players will play on a daily basis for years to come.
What's wrong with it?
The main problem with it is that it gives skilled players an enormous advantage at the moment.
Gee, we hate that.
I know. So, I mean, obviously, if you're a skilled player, I mean, this interests me, obviously, on both sides of the fence, right? Because this is a game that skilled players can get a big advantage at. But yeah, I mean, any game where the skilled player has an enormous advantage makes it difficult to attract and retain casual players because they're going to just get beaten and beaten and beaten. And, you know, I mean, if they're lottery players, maybe they put up with that. But I think the demographic who would be interested in playing this game casually will lose interest if that is their experience. So that part needs to get fixed, in my opinion, for these companies or the industry, at least, to meet its projection.
Let's talk about the different types of games they offer, right? And if any of those are better than others in addressing that particular problem.
Sure. So there's sort of two main game types. So the way it works, let's take Major League Baseball as an example, because that's the main sport that's going right now. So on DraftKings, for instance, which is one of the two big sites, if you want to play a Major League Baseball game, you could go today, you could put money on the site, and then you're going to create a lineup. And a lineup is 10 players, two pitchers and eight position players, one for each of the positions on a baseball field. And you're going to choose from a list of all the players that are playing that day. And each player is assigned by the site, not by a market or anything, but arbitrarily by the site is assigned a salary value. So Mike Trout, who's the best player in baseball, he might cost $5,500. And Curtis Granderson, who is, you know, an okay player, might cost $3,500. So, you know, the site kind of grades out each player based on roughly how good they are and assigns a value. So you create a lineup of 10 players, you have to stay within $50,000. So there's trade-offs. You get to pick a good player here, but that means you have to pick someone not so good here. Okay, that's you build a lineup, and then you can enter game types. And there's two main game types. The first is what they call a cash game or a 50-50. These are any games where roughly 50% of the people get paid. So a basic cash game is just heads up, you against one other player, and whoever scores the most points wins. It's pretty simple. You know, the winner gets the money, the loser goes the loser goes home. So and then they expand that format from just two players. There's some minor games where you can play with three players or five players, but those are not, there's not a lot of action in those games. The other type of cash game that has more action, it's called a 50-50. And those have big fields, like 100, 1,000, sometimes 20,000 entries for that. And then roughly half the entries will get paid roughly double the entry fee. You know, and I say roughly because the site takes a cut in there. So either they actually double up your number and they only pay the top 45%, or they pay 50%, but they give you a little less than double. So either way, they take their cut. So that's one type of contest. these ones that pay 50% of the people. The other main type of contest, and this is sort of their headline grabbing contests, are called guaranteed prize pool contests. And that's the same thing where hundreds or thousands or even 10,000s of people enter, but instead of paying half the field, they pay only the top, say, 15 to 20% of the field, and they pay on a scale. Where first place, the first place out of 20,000 will win some huge prize relative to the entry fee, you know, and then it drops off quickly.
It's like a tournament.
It's sort of like a poker tournament would be like that. So, you know, everyone enters, 8,000 people enter, and then first prize is 10 million or whatever. Yeah. So that's, those are not the numbers on Daily Fantasy right now, but they had some contests, for instance, in football season, and even with golf now, they've had some contests where first prize was $1 million, I think. So that's the scale. Most day-to-day baseball contests are more like first prize would be $4,000 to $10,000, kind of depending.
And are both those games equally bad for the bad player?
No. So of those two game types, the guaranteed prize pool tournaments potentially give the sharp players a much, much bigger advantage compared to the cash games. And so much so that it's not today because there's not enough sharp players. The sharp player kind of pool has not grown to maximum efficiency of extracting money from this thing yet. This is still in flux, I would say.
There's room for our listeners to jump in.
Correct. There is room for listeners to jump in today. But potentially speaking, you know, sort of at maturity, the guaranteed prize pool tournaments will give the sharp players a much bigger share of the total prize package and give a casual player a much less return on their prize investment, on their entry fee investment.
This kind of reminds me of horse racing, where you know, horse racing is a pari-mutuel pool. The house takes an enormous rake, like this place does, and the house doesn't really care who wins the money because you're not winning it from the house.
Right.
Now, the difference
they think
is
they don't care.
Well, yeah, in horse racing, the jockey clubs, you know, do care. And, you know, have done things to hassle winning players because they realize that if the losing players are losing their money quicker, they're going to get lost as players altogether.
Right.
Although that certainly hasn't happened in horse racing. But
yeah, I mean, it depends. I think it depends on the demographic of who, you know, who's going to. That's the theory. And sometimes that happens quickly. You know, and games burn out really fast, at least played for money, and sometimes it doesn't happen. And I think there's a demographic factor, there's a frequency, you know, people go to the track, maybe especially when there was no off-track betting, you go to the track, you know, once a week. I mean, I don't know what the schedule is, but there's, you know, you go to the track, you bet, and then you go home and you don't bet for a while, and you make money at your job, and then you come back and do it again, you know, whereas, you know, so it depends on the schedule of the game and so forth.
Yeah, although now, I mean, you know, again, this is like horse racing. They sort of carved out this niche for themselves in order to say, this is not gambling, so it's allowed.
Right.
Horse racing kind of did the same thing. They didn't try to claim they weren't gambling, but their lobbyists were strong enough that you can bet on horse racing on the internet.
Right.
You know,
So I don't know the numbers. I know almost nothing about horse racing except basically what you've described already. So I don't know how this compares to horse racing, but I do know that in these guaranteed prize pool tournaments, it requires a really counterintuitive strategy to win these things on a consistent basis. And so casual players, it's not a strategy that casual players are going to just stumble into. And so even if they're good at picking players, like even a casual player who knows a lot about baseball and watches baseball every day, if they're not also a gambler or a player of strategy games, you know, if they don't have that skill set, they're possibly going to be okay at the cash games. You know, they're going to probably not win, but they're probably not going to do too badly, but they will still have very little chance to do well in the guaranteed prize pool tournaments. So that's why the sharp players have an advantage, because the way you have to view the game, again, you're not, so ostensibly, you know, you get this lineup of 10 slots and you're picking 10 players to put in the slots. And that's sort of the obvious approach, right? I like Mike Trout. He hits the ball hard. I like, you know, I like Matt Harvey. He throws a lot of, you know, he pitches a lot of strikeouts, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, so you pick these five guys that you like, oh, you know, and they're against the Phillies and the Phillies suck or whatever. But then, you know, and then you have these four other slots and you have, you know, a few thousand bucks left, and then you're like, well, who can I pick? You know, and you just kind of throw people in to fill the rest. And that's kind of how casual players tend to fill these lineups out. The problem is that that's viewing the lineup on an individual basis. So you're picking individuals. But what you really want to do with all of these tournaments in every sport, but really especially baseball and also football, is you have to view the lineup itself as the entity, right? So it's sort of like a parlay in sports betting. Is when you bet a parlay, you know, some people pick individual games, you know, that one and that one and that one and that one and that one, and they put it on a parlay, and that's not a winning strategy, right? If you just pick individual games that you seem to like and you put it on a parlay and you put $5 on it, that's fun, but you're not going to win. The way to beat a parlay is you have to look, part of the way you could beat is you could look for correlations. So you could look for results that will tend to coexist, you know, to happen at the same time. And if you can find two results that are going to happen together, even if each individually is relatively unlikely, your parlay will be profitable because you're betting on both of these things to happen and you're getting paid as if they're independent events, but they're not. So if the first one happens, the second one's far more likely to happen.
So a big favorite in football, you know, that's giving up a lot of points parlayed with the over.
Sure.
Those two, right? Because
yeah.
The times when they win by that big margin,
right.
They're more likely to
right.
play. They're, but
yeah.
Most places won't allow you to do those kinds
well,
of things.
Well, yeah. The sports books are have varying degrees of tolerance for that kind of betting. But it's unquestionably a thing. It exists in all sports. I mean, it's a natural in baseball because if say there's a visiting team that's a favorite, little off topic, but there's a visiting team that's a favorite, which means the home team is an underdog. If you bet on the home team to win, if the home team wins, there's a chance that they're not going to play that last half inning. So you're going to get 17 half innings instead of 18. That bumps the average score by down by a little bit under a half a run, which is going to favor the under. So and a total is going to reflect the average outcome, which means usually the visiting team's going to win. So that total is going to be shaded a little bit higher in anticipation that the visiting team's going to win, but boom, when the home team wins, that score is going to go under. So those two things are mildly correlated. They're not correlated enough that you can just bet it blindly every time you see it and win, but it's correlated enough that if you like a home dog for another reason, for instance, then you often have an underplay on a parlay that's profitable. Anyway, that's sort of off topic, but that's the kind of thinking that's required for these DFS strategies. And in fact, it's a lot more complicated than that because first of all, in daily fantasy sports, there's no restrictions on how much correlation you can exploit. You can exploit it as much as you possibly can. So you can look at all the games that are going today and you can try to figure out as correlated as you can make it, and then you can fill your lineup accordingly. So in baseball, for instance, this means that if I had to give you if you said to me, hey, Ed, how do I win at baseball guaranteed prize pool tournaments, you know, today, give me the 2-minute strategy, I would say, well, you're not going to win in 2 minutes, but I'll get you close. And this is what I would say. I would say you look at the Vegas lines for all the games going that day. So and you look particularly at the totals, and you're going to look for the games with the high totals. So you want games, the average total is about 7.5 or 8. And so you want games that are kind of significantly over that. 8.5 is okay, 9 is better. And then when Colorado, some games in Colorado or in Wrigley Field sometimes have totals that go 10, 10.5, even 11. I saw an 11. So those would be fantastic games to target. But really the 9s are good games to look at. You want to find the team after you look at those. Find those totals. You want to look at all the teams involved in those games. And then you want to go to their lineups. When the lineups come out, they usually come out 3 hours before game time. You'll get a lineup. And you want to compare the price of the lineup to in each of those games. And you want to find the lineups that are cheap. So, and what I mean by this is you can go to a site. There's a site called rotogrinders.com. They have all this information available. So they'll show you all the lineups. They'll show you who's playing. And they'll also quote you all the salary numbers from the sites like FanDuel and DraftKings. So you want to find lineups that are relatively cheap. You can also – there's nine players in a lineup, eight if it's a National League game, nine if it's an American League game. And you can pick and choose. Like if there's one really expensive player, you can skip him. This is kind of getting complicated. But the idea is you want to pick a cheap lineup and you want to grab six players from that lineup. And it's better if they're contiguous, like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's better for you. But you want to grab six players from that lineup. So that's the first component of your lineup. You've picked six of your 10 players. And then if you've picked cheaply, that gives you a lot of money, relatively speaking, for the other four slots. And the other four slots are the two pitcher slots and the two hitter slots that you haven't filled already. And then you want to pick pitchers who are likely to strike out a ton of batters. Those are usually the most expensive pitchers, but you know, it takes some baseball knowledge to understand exactly which pitchers are the best on any given day. But you basically want to pick two of the best four pitchers, I would say. And then you want to pick two hitters that are two of some of the best hitters of that day, you know. And so it does require a little bit of baseball knowledge to be able to identify, you know, who the absolute best pitching and hitting talent is for a given day. But you want hitters that are going to hit home runs, that are likely to hit home runs. And you want pitchers that are going to pitch strikeouts, and you want a cheap block of six players from the same team. And that's it. That's your lineup. You know, that's my 2 minute it's probably 5 minutes, but that's, you know, that'll keep you afloat if you set lineups that way.
Do you think that you need to know something about, say, baseball? I mean, if I were to attempt this as someone who knows absolutely nothing about sports at all, it just seems to me I would have a much harder road to hoe.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard for me to say that you can know nothing about baseball and do this successfully. I think, you know, I've been interested in baseball for a while, so I have, you know, a moderate level of knowledge about the game. And that combined with this sort of insight about lineup construction has, you know, helped me enjoy daily fantasy, you know, build lineups that are clearly, you know, clearly my lineup building, you know, heuristic is a winning lineup. You know, I'm comparing my lineups to the lineups that the top players who have been playing for years are making, and in many cases they're identical or almost identical. You know, out of 10 players, we choose 8 of the same, and the two they have different, I'm like, yeah, those two are also good. You know, so it's clear that this is, you know, how they're doing it.
Can you see their lineups? Obviously not before the game starts, right?
Yeah, you can see their lineups. And this is another thing that's great about, or great, well, it depends on how you think what great is. But as soon as the game starts, so in other words, you know, if I have Cubs in my lineup, as soon as the Cubs game starts, boom, all the Cubs in everyone's lineups appear. So you can see, yeah. And then it gets locked in, right? Like, as soon as the Cubs game starts, if you have Cubs in your lineup, boom, they're locked. You can't change it. And then it shows everybody's lineups. So you can actually kind of, like, if you play, this is an aside, but if you're playing a heads-up contest and, you know, there's a night game and you can kind of deduce what that missing player is by counting up the salary and figuring out how much is left and then looking at the salary list and say, oh, he must be playing so-and-so. So, you know, if you need to come from behind and you were also playing so-and-so, you could be like, well, let me just switch so that I have a shot to beat him.
Swing. Yeah.
And so you can find out every day what the best players are betting on?
Yes. Because, so let's say today, you know, today is Tuesday. They usually have 15 baseball games on a Tuesday. They often start, most of them often start after 4 p.m. Our time here in Pacific. So what would happen is every day there's going to be a contest. I'm going to enter, I don't know, 10 lineups today, say. And then as soon as
Because I haven't done this at all. So you can enter 10 different lineups in the same tournament? Or
you can enter hundreds of different lineups in the same tournament, which is part of the problem.
Well, but you're also playing against yourself.
Yeah, but these tournaments often have 20,000 entries.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There is definitely a playing against yourself factor, but it's clearly good to do that to a large extent, you know, in these tournaments. You know, if you can, because the other thing is what I just described about lineup construction, you know, so let's say there's four games with a total of nine or higher, right? So that's eight potential teams you can grab, right? And then there's, let's say there's five good pitchers that you think have a shot to do really well today. And then there's, you know, 20 odd players that you think are in a good spot to hit a home run today. Well, there's lots of ways to combine eight teams, five pitchers, and 20 odd players to make unique lineups that all have a shot to win first place. And theoretically, they're probably every one of them is plus EV. You know, so that's right. So you can enter them all simultaneously and just suck the EV from all the lineups simultaneously.
Would that same strategy work on the 50-50 tournaments?
It's the 50-50 tournaments. Sure, you could enter. I don't see why not. You could enter multiple lineups in those as well.
The method of picking the lineup.
Oh, no,
we had a bit of this discussion last week.
The method of picking the lineup is quite different for a cash game because your goal is different. In the guaranteed prize pool tournament, your goal is to win first place out of 25,000 people. These prize structures are highly weighted toward the very toppest of top spots. So in a $25,000 player entry tournament, the average player is only going to win, you know, one out of 25,000 times, which is not very often. But yet, a large percentage, and I don't have the number off the top of my head, but a large percentage that significant, I would say probably 30% of that prize pool, 20 to 30%, is going to be concentrated in those top 10 spots. So top 10 out of 25,000 are going to win a huge chunk of that prize pool, which means your goal really is, boom, just hit the top. You want that maximum chance to win first place, which is why you're going to construct your lineup that way. Why that's a decent way to construct it. I don't claim to have the ideal lineup construction nailed down yet, but that's the goal of that lineup construction. In a 50-50 game, your goal is to get a lineup that will hit above average as often as possible. So if average is 90 points, say, then your goal is to make your lineup go a little bit more than 90 points as often as possible. And that's a completely different goal. And so your lineup construction needs to be quite different.
Because in the 50-50, if there's 100 people, if you come in 42nd, it pays the same
goal,
as if you,
yeah,
paid,
you win.
Paid,
yep.
Came in first.
Right. Yeah. So in the 50-50, the lineup construction is created so that it's the shape of distribution, right? If you look at a lineup and you could say, what's the probability distribution of the outcomes of this lineup? And you can draw a graph, right? And depending on how you construct that lineup, that graph's going to look very different. I mean, if you play, here's just a simple example. Let's say you pick a pitcher on the Cubs and then you pick three hitters from the Mets and the Mets are playing the Cubs. Okay. Well, if the Mets hitters do well, that means the Cubs pitcher's probably not going to do well. And vice versa. If the Cubs pitcher does well, then the Mets hitters are probably not going to do well. Which means, and that doesn't mean it's bad. It means that, you're going to have a much lower dispersion of outcomes, right? You're going to have, you're basically locking in a pretty good outcome from one side and a not so good outcome from the other side, which is going to add up to kind of a middling outcome. And that's, sometimes that's fine. Sometimes that's what you want in one of these tournaments, but that's not what you would want in a guaranteed prize pool tournament. You want to avoid that kind of behavior completely in a guaranteed prize pool tournament.
The football season's coming up pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Is daily fantasy football totally different than daily fantasy baseball?
Definitely not totally different. So by the way, football season is the big, it's the big kahuna for daily fantasy. If you look at their revenues, I mean, their revenues in 2014, they're published, or I don't know how they're published, but it's like, you know, one, and then football season starts and it's like three and then seven. You know, it's like football season's clearly where they get most of their action. And obviously they're going to have a lot of casual player action during football season. So it's a great time to play daily fantasy. The same ideas apply to football, you know, lineup construction. If you're trying to win a guaranteed prize pool, your goal is to create extreme outcomes. You want a lineup that has a chance to just hit the ceiling on everything. And that, requires exploiting correlations. So you're going to, exploit correlations between quarterback performance, usually in receiver performance, is something you're going to exploit. So you're going to want to roster a quarterback with receivers from the same team so that if they score a touchdown, you get it twice, and so forth. And then also there's other tricks. You're looking for uniqueness of your lineup. It helps you more if you pick a player that no one else picks and that player goes off than if you pick a player that everyone picks and that player goes off. That it helps you more if you grab unlikelier players. But of course the players that people use more tend to be better. So that's a trade-off. You have to, you know, I don't mean to make this out like it's simple. It's not dead simple, but it's the principles are fairly clear. And if you're a games player and you can kind of understand, you know, you'll see. And in football season, you just see the dumbest. I hate to say it, but you just see just the dumbest lineups that people, so after the contest starts, like at the end of the day, you know, I played in this $25,000, 25,000 entry contest. I can download at the end of the day, a spreadsheet that has all 25,000 players lineups on it. It has everyone's handle and all the players they played that day and the number of points that they scored.
So, all right. So I know they have head to heads, right? For as much as like $10,000, you can play a single guy.
Yep.
Now, in the beginnings of online poker, you could make notes about your opponents, so you would and the software would even alert you, hey, the fish just entered the software, right? Is there a way you can invite head-to-heads against specific players you think are bad?
Yes.
Or you can't?
Yes.
Okay, how does that work?
I haven't done it, but people keep inviting me, so they must think of there's one guy. I just keep getting so-and-so invited you to play head-to-head, and it's the same guy, and it's like every week or something. I don't know how it works exactly, but yeah, there's some function where you can say, hey, I set up a contest, you know, I'm challenging you, come play me, you know. So yeah, there's definitely that functionality.
Wow.
All right, so Ed Fish Miller, would skill in regular fantasy sports translate into skill for daily fantasy?
Sort of. You know, so I think that some of the ideas about picking out player performance, you know, who's going to perform well and so forth, will translate, but all this lineup construction stuff, this is not something you worry about in regular fantasy, you know, and it's really critically important. I mean, the lineup construction is probably the most important part. I think it's more important than picking players. As I said before, if you just pick players, even if you're better than average at it, you're not going to win because your lineups, your probability distribution is going to be the wrong shape, and then you're not going to win. So you have to get the right shape first, which means you have to have the right, you know, sort of constructed lineup, and then you pick players within that framework. And you know, so maybe the traditional fantasy players might have some advantage on the player picking part, but yeah, you really have to, you know, screw your brain on exactly for daily fantasy to win.
Interesting. And you think football is equally broken as baseball?
Yeah, I think it's perhaps more so. So part of the problem is that, so here's sort of the problems, and here's what the sites could do to fix it. Okay. So the first thing the sites could do is they could fix their salary algorithm. So right now they pick arbitrary numbers for what these players are worth. And those numbers, often, in my opinion, bear only passing resemblance to how good a player is, you know, in a given contest versus another player. Right. So they could be a lot sharper in how they create those salary numbers. They could use a market. I mean, I know there's some legal issues about what they could do, but they could creatively have some kind of play money market where, you know, you can bet over and under on certain players' totals and then win points toward a pretty t-shirt or something. I don't know. You know, I mean, there's creative ways that they could do this, or they could just use, you know, sharper algorithms to set their, so that's one thing they could do. They could create lineup constraints. Right now in baseball, for instance, you get to pick out of your 8 position players on DraftKings, at least. The constraint is you have to choose at least 3 different teams. And that's why it's that 6-1-1 thing, because that's the most extreme split you can make if you're required to pick 3 teams, is 6 from one team, 1-1. But they could require 5 teams or 6 teams, you know, out of, you know, different. And that would reduce the effect that piling up players has on the outcome, and sort of make it more accessible to casual players who really don't want to create lineups that way. They don't want to start, you know, the catcher from the Rangers just because the Rangers have a 9 over under and he's batting 6th between, you know, these other guys. I mean, people, that's not how typical people pick players. So, they put some more constraints on lineup construction that way. It could help this out a little bit. You know, again, the salaries would go a long way, especially in football season, because, you know, it's sort of like sports betting. With an efficient market that prices the teams, you know, you can walk up and you can say, I want to bet on the Bengals, you know, yeah. and it's not that bad because the market's priced the Bengals for that game, you know, and so the more they could do the salaries like that, the friendlier the game's going to be to casual players. So those are some things they could do to fix it. But right now, everything's tilted toward the skill players. There's just too many. The skill players just have too many options, too many edges to exploit, and they're all cumulative. You know, they can exploit lineup construction. They can exploit, you know, grabbing undervalued players. They can exploit their knowledge about which players are likely to be underused. They can exploit. I mean, there's just so many things that a skilled player can exploit in this game right now that they can and do use them all. And it's just, you know, it's just very hard. And the other thing is that skilled players, as you brought up before, can enter dozens or hundreds of times. So there's a guy on DraftKings who literally enters every single contest every single day on the site from the $10,000 contest down to the $1 contest. He's in every one.
Do you think he's automated it? That he has a program that automates?
I have no idea how he does it. Well, he doesn't have to have a program because many of the contests, he could just, like the head-to-head contest, he can just create one lineup and just go click, 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 and just enter every single contest. You know, as far as creating, he also now, he just recently, it seems to me, I just noticed, he started creating 100, 200 lineups for the GPP tournaments. And that, I think he or somebody has to sit there clicking players, you know, to create those lineups. So I don't believe that's automated, though I was searching to see how automated this could be, and I read that a job listing from FanDuel that said they were trying to create an API, which I presume means they're trying to make it automated so that you can just write software that creates lineups for you, which sounds like a bad idea to me, but what do I know?
You mean use their software to create this?
Correct. An API is an interface. So basically you could, you know, once they have an API that they say, okay, you know, here's our API.
Quick,
then
pick me a winning lineup.
Yeah, I could write a program and say, all right, I'm going to have a program create 1,000 lineups for me. And then I'm going to say, all right, enter those all on this contest. Click, and then the program would talk to DraftKings or to FanDuel rather, and FanDuel would understand and say, okay, we'll create all those lineups for you.
I have to believe people are doing that already.
But that doesn't exist. I mean, there's no API.
If there's no API, but maybe they've, you know, built a screen scraper into it to actually go in and do the clicking for them.
This is possible. People could macro it, but it would be much less. I don't see evidence that people are creating thousands of lineups. I don't see the evidence that's happening.
But I don't think you need thousands of lineups.
No,
right?
You don't need it, but thousands are better than hundreds or better than dozens. So, yeah, I mean, I don't see the evidence.
Really? Is that true? Do you think you could create 2,000 lineups and they would all have positive EV?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I don't have proof for that, but that's my belief at the moment.
I would think you'd top out at 1984.
No, but I mean, at some point you can only have a certain number of winning, and you're kind of deluging the prize pool, right?
Yes,
I mean,
correct.
You're donating more money into the prize pool. At some point, you must pass a number where you've put too much money into the prize pool compared to what you can win.
I agree. I think that number's a lot higher than 10%.
Oh, okay.
Of all entries. So.
All right. We have a couple more questions for Ed Miller talking about fantasy sports. But first, we could talk about our sponsors. South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. On Mondays through Thursdays in May, you can earn free buffets. Pay 300 points before 1 p.m. and get a free lunch buffet. Pay 600 points before 8 p.m., earn a free dinner buffet. You can earn both lunch and dinners with the same 600 points if you do it right. Double points will occur again Memorial Day, Monday, May 25th. All machines, no limits. You'll see me on Quick Quads. This month, the South Point is giving away extra free play on the weekends if they have your email address. They do this once or twice a year. How much you get is based on your mailer. The bonuses this time have ranged in the 10 to 20% of the specified coin in. That is, if you get the largest mailer, which is $75 a week, you play an additional 750 coin in, and they give you $150 in free play. That's a 20% bonus, which is pretty sweet. At the Palms, on the weekly 7 p.m. drawings on Fridays, winners share $10,000. You don't need to be there to win, but you need to claim by midnight. They have multiple entries Friday afternoon and Friday evening. PFP, play for prizes, through May 28th will be Fresh and Easy gift cards. Fresh and Easy is a grocery market found in Nevada as well as California and Arizona. If you're an out-of-towner, you probably want to go to the market before you leave town. The gift cards may be earned and redeemed Monday through Fridays at a rate of 0.2%. You keep your points. At videopoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on many of the games. Good place to practice Quick Quads, for example. The game of this week is Double Super Times Pay. This is a 7 coins per line game where you get random multipliers up to 10x both before and after the deal, up to a total of 20 times. There are no strategy changes required, and in round numbers, the game adds 0.5% and lots of variance to the return. But if you have the choice between playing the game in its regular version or in Double Super Times Pay, I'm going to go for the Double Super Times Pay. All right. Ed, when poker sites started up, online poker, most of them had initial deposits where you put in $200 or $500 and they would match it or blah, blah, blah. Do the fantasy, daily fantasy sports models have similar sign-up bonuses?
So, sort of. They have the bonuses. Both FanDuel and DraftKings have, I believe, have a sign-up bonus. However, they both have requirements, betting requirements, as is typical for these bonuses. You have to play it through a certain amount of the time to get your bonus. And DraftKings, in particular, I know has been people. Someone filed a suit against them because basically they charged that. This is my understanding. I could be wrong about this, but I recall that the charge was that they had. That it was too hard to earn the bonus, basically. That it was a $600, 100% bonus, and someone basically said your requirements for earning that bonus were too hard, and that made it
uncollectible.
Right? Yeah, that's sort of the claim. I don't know. I can't speak to what merit that claim might have. I don't know. But it's here's what I will say about the bonuses: is they are not as generous as the poker bonuses were back in the old days.
But still, if you're a winning player, it's free money.
I believe they offer bonuses, and I believe that they are earnable and that's free money. So there it is. Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know, in the beginning of online gambling, I don't know if this is true of FanDuel and DraftKings and et cetera, but in the beginning of online gambling, it was very easy to sign up under any name you wanted as long as you had an email address.
Right. Yeah, haven't tried any of that. I don't know people. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. There were people I knew who were doing this as a cottage industry, and they were signing up a zillion identities on every online casino and making really quite a lot of money doing it. To my understanding, that's not really a thing. I don't think it's worth the effort to try to get these bonuses.
Well, but if you're playing anyway, why not? I mean, once you've earned your $1,000, why not just sign up in your wife's name? And
right. I mean, I guess on a limited basis, it makes sense to do it. See, a lot of those casino players, they weren't using any particular skill. You know, so they were just signing up, you know, running through. Sometimes there was actually literally an autoplay that would autoplay the blackjack for you. And you could just hit autoplay, run it through, cash out, do it under the next name. You know, on these sites, you actually have to play the game. You potentially have to be good at it to make, you know, to make this worthwhile. And so the number, the pool of people already is, you know, relatively small. It's down to people who are good at daily fantasy sports and, you know, most of those people don't spend time creating a ton of names. I mean, my experience is that the Venn space between people who create lots of names to exploit bonuses and people who are like really good at poker or daily fantasy sports is not too much overlap.
Yeah.
Several states are at least considering allowing daily fantasy sports betting in their existing casinos. Do you see this as good or bad?
It's good. I don't see why not. And the problems that, you know, I want to say my concerns about the game as it's tilted towards skill are less in a live setting, just as they are with poker. I mean, I perceive that online poker has a lot more problem with this than live poker does. And so live fantasy sports games, I think, could be fun. And I don't perceive we'll have nearly the problem. You know, you're not going to have sharp players coming and entering 1,000 lineups, I don't think. I mean, I don't know how they're going to structure it.
Or they may just, you know, throw them back in your face the way they do with parlay cards.
Right, exactly, yeah. So you know, I my perception is that this could be a fun game to play in a live casino. So
and a great way to circumvent the, you know, anti-sports gambling laws. You know, I think it's actually a great idea. Whoever figures out how to bring it into the casinos, you know, I think they're going to make a lot of money. And if the casinos make money, it's better for us to make money.
Yeah, and if the sharp players live in Pennsylvania, for example, then he's not going to be betting in Mississippi.
Yeah, exactly.
So there'll be local sharps, but there won't be national sharps in your local
unless,
casino.
Again, they follow the horse racing model where the money all goes into the pyramid in horse racing. Even if you're betting here in Nevada, the money actually goes into the track in, you know, Pennsylvania or wherever the track is. The money, it all gets thrown into the same pool. So it would just depend on how they set it up.
All right. Are there leagues in daily fantasy sports?
I don't know exactly. What do you mean by a league?
Like, well, a bowling league is Richard and I could challenge you and your wife. I don't know who would be favored, but
that it's possible, right? That infrastructure is in place. I don't perceive that there's a ton of it right now. Like, I don't perceive that a lot of people are doing it. That would be a great way to do it. I mean, that's, you know, kind of cuts against a lot of what I think are the concerns about this, you know, how the game works is that, you know, the sharp players who you don't know and are somewhere randomly, you can't avoid them. They're in every contest. They're entering a zillion times. Well, yeah, you could just create a league with your friends. Hey, we're going to play every day, you know, and this is our, you know, this is the name of our league. And, you know, each of us will enter a lineup every day. I mean, I think that's a great thing that could happen. I don't see that it's happening a lot right now.
All right. So we have 1 minute to go. So
we should talk about how you can reach us. You can email us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com or find us on facebook.com/gamblingwithanedge. You can tweet us your questions at RWM21. If you want the show delivered to you automatically every week, you can sign up for that at iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or at my site, richardmunchkin.com. To find an archive of all the past shows, you can find those at bobdancer.com.
The latest afternoon, Richard and I are being interviewed by the owner of the radio station, basically telling people who don't know us what the show's all about and what Richard and I are all about. Probably you will get to know, if you listen to that, you'll probably get to know more about Richard and me than we wish you did know. So anyway, it's somewhere in the Vegas AllNet Radio.
3 o'clock, VegasAllNetRadio.com.
So, very good. So, thank you, Ed Miller.
Thank you,
Richard
much.
Munchkin. Yep. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good night. Good day.
listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.
Views and opinions expressed on this program were those of the hosts and guests and did not necessarily reflect those of Vegas All Net Radio, its affiliates, or its parent company.